Welcome to the Lowdown. Today's show, Oilers win both games on the weekend, have a commanding lead in the series. Sunday's game, instant classic. Whatever your favorite classic is, whether it's Lassie or Reservoir Dogs, that was one of them. No doubt about it. The Lowdown is driven by Wolf GMC Buick, corner of 184th Street and Stony Plain Road. Truck Month continues in April. Deep discounts on remaining 2023 Sierras and Costco member savings on select Buick and GMC SUVs. Visit wolfgmcbuick.com. I am pumped. Even though the game ended like at 3:30 in the morning, it was a great game. I had a terrible time getting to sleep because the adrenaline was going. That was intense the entire game. One Cobb? Are you kidding me? Wow. We're on Twitter at Low Tide and at Declan Kruger. We're on sports1440.ca, iHeartRadio, Radio Player Canada, on the radio. And after it, we do the Apple and Spotify podcast. We tweet it out on X. We are everywhere, honestly. I mean, you can't get us in outer space, but maybe you can, if you know what I mean. Text or call us at 1-833-401-1440. Our guest today, Rachel Dorey from Staff and Graph Podcast at 140 today, Jason Greger at 120, and Mamma Mia! Straight ahead at 140 today, we're joined by our friend Declan Kruger. Tell me all about your weekend, sir. Leave nothing out.
Man, it was awesome. All I did was watch sports all weekend long. Tons of NHL, tons of NBA. It was phenomenal. I actually tweeted during the Clippers-Mavs game that games like these are the reason you never pass up the opportunity to watch sports if given the chance. The Mavs erased a 31-point lead. Now, they did end up losing the game, and credit to James Harden. He had a phenomenal performance. Kyrie Irving right there as well with him. Clippers pulled it out to even the series 2-2. Two Oilers games. It was a phenomenal weekend. Wouldn't have done it any other way. The only slight exception is I might have mixed a few college football games in there.
Wow.
Great weekend.
So, do you eat and sleep and drink during this period?
Oh, yeah. I got a 12-pack of bubbly watermelon flavor. I was drinking those. I love coffee. I love decaf coffee, so I was making pots of decaf coffee and drinking those in the evening.
I do the decaf.
Yeah, I actually didn't have any groceries on Saturday, so I was just eating Mundaire sausage and crackers. Had to pick a couple up yesterday. Mm-hmm. But overall, I was well-fed. I was well-rested. I was much invested. And it was a good weekend. I wish that flowed off the tongue a little better. It wasn't that good.
Whistled a little. Yeah. I don't know how the hell you did that.
It was a great weekend, man.
76ers, I was a little disappointed that they lost, but New York's got it going on. What are you going to do?
New York's a really good team. I think New York will be in the conference finals. I think they'll beat Indiana next round. I think that's a favorable matchup for them. And then Boston just has no excuses, man. I don't think New York can beat Boston, even if Jalen Brunson is having 47-10 performances. Boston's just too good. But like I've said before, if they don't at least get to the NBA Finals, Missoula is on the hot seat. The narratives around Tatum and Brown will start to develop. If they haven't already, things will be bad if Boston doesn't get there. New York's a favorable matchup in the conference finals. But credit to the Knicks. They're playing well. They have a superstar. They're going to make a deep run.
Natives of New England, that's the Amish? I'm not sure who you might have been talking about.
I know. I do this a little bit when I talk about basketball. Revere? My mind is going 1,000 miles a minute. My mouth can't keep up, so I stumble a little bit. But okay. I think I backtracked. And
we love your passion. No doubt about that. Okay, the Edmonton Oilers. Wild in the streets. That was such a great hockey game. A lot of people on my blog and elsewhere they're complaining. It was too intense. Need to get a 3-goal lead. No. If you can beat a team 4-1 and can beat them 1-Cobb, what's left? One or the other team blows you out? That's got to be it. I mean, I was so impressed with the Edmonton Oilers today. I actually wrote about it. It's just up at The Athletic. The Oilers matchup and tweaks most impacting the series versus the Kings. Special teams, massive deal. +8. McDavid versus Deneau and Doughty. A year ago, it was problem. This year, no problem. Rolling four lines and three pairings. Everybody's getting a turn. Nobody's being, used too much, really. And we're four games into the series. Defensive zone faceoffs are being allotted to the top end players. And that's helping on the breakouts because Connor McDavid has more clean air. And their attention to detail and calm defense, massive for the Edmonton Oilers. You name a player on the ice last night, and they did something to contribute to victory. So many things are working. Skinner was quality. Now, a lot of shots were from the outside, no doubt about it. Some of them were really high danger, and he was excellent at stopping them. I think he's gaining confidence. Stories of series are told after games like this. And if he gets on a roll, we saw it a year ago with Vegas. You never know A hot goaltender can take you a long, long way. Just ask Billy Ranford if you see him in 1990 again. He'll tell you. Bouchard's bomb was huge. You know, they have so many weapons on the power play. And when that goal went in, there were so many advantages or options for him. He had Hyman in front of the net, could have passed off, could have sent it to Draisaitl for the hammer, shoots the puck, brilliant. I've read a lot of stuff over the years about when somebody shoots the puck that hard, the goalie really doesn't react. You don't get time to. So if you react, it's after the puck goes by you. It's either going to hit you, it's going to hit the post, it's going to go wide, or it's going to go in. And in Bouchard's case, it went in. It was the only goal of the game. Massive deal. As I said, everybody's contributing. There's a couple of things I've been watching for a time. Drew Doughty's running around, and he's a veteran guy, and he's also having success at the other end of the ice. A couple of goals. I don't know if you saw it or not, but Evander Kane caught him and caught him good, and it hurt. And when we talk about Evander Kane and what he does, one of the things that he accomplishes is intimidation and physical punishment. And that's what happened to Drew Doughty. You've seen it happen to Oilers players. I will tell you that Quentin Byfield is looking for Connor McDavid every time he's on the ice. There is a certain amount of violence and targeting in any NHL game, especially in the playoffs. Evander Kane caught Drew Doughty, and those are for sins of the past and the future, but we'll be interested in watching Drew Doughty. And what, did you drop something?
I did. Okay. You heard that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that was me. Sorry about that.
Was it? Did it break?
No, it was a bottle of water.
Okay. All
and right. Nothing spilled. The cap was on. I just butterfingers a little
well,
bit.
Well, you were Drew Doughty on that play.
I fell down. I know. That was hilarious, by the way.
What, the hit?
No, less than a minute left in game four when he fell down when he had the puck in his own zone on the empty net. Yeah. That was hilarious. And then he just like let someone else take the puck.
Well, sure.
Up,
you know, I clearly so cannot funny. Function. My motor skills are down. The other thing, and I could talk about the Oilers last night all day because they were that good. They had great discipline. They were not going to take an extra penalty. The penalty itself was a little, but the Oilers took advantage. After that, from that moment on, you've really got to be careful because they're looking for things. Now, obviously, there was a penalty. But I thought the Oilers were really well coached and executed the game plan brilliantly. Where do you go from here? Well, you'd like to end it. And the reason you want to end it quickly is that a lot of these other series, one of the teams is folding like a cheap tent. And that's always a big deal. You need to have these teams last six or seven games. Looks like that may not happen at all. Tonight, for instance, Florida leading 3-1 over Tampa Bay and the Golden Knights up on the Stars 2-1. If you're an Oilers fan, you really want that series to get to 2-2 tonight. That would be a big advantage for later on. On Tuesday, the Leafs are in trouble. Got to get the power play going against Boston. The Islanders and the Hurricanes, I'm not saying it's over, but the Islanders really have to do a lot more than they've been doing. They're down 3-1, and Colorado up over Winnipeg. I really did think Winnipeg had more, but, I mean, did you see the Cale Makar goal? Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
That was a Connor McDavid-esque goal.
Yeah, it was.
Like, I watched it, and I was like, whoo, everything I've been saying about Cale Makar, I was right. He just vindicated me.
Well,
it was an incredible goal.
I mean, I don't know whether you needed that, but wasn't like the Shawshank Redemption or anything.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. He wasn't worried about what I had to say anyway, but it was a great goal.
It was a
great
goal.
Credit
right.
to Colorado for taking that series by the reins and running with it.
And I don't know that Vancouver did that. The Preds just need to put a puck in an empty net. Now it's 3-1, but I've been suspicious of Vancouver all year long, and they're going to make me look foolish, or I'm going to brag and brag and brag and brag because I don't think they're real. I think Vegas is, Dallas is, Edmonton is. Colorado is. I don't know about Vancouver. I mean, they have to beat one of the teams I just mentioned for me to believe in them. Not enough to beat Nashville. They have to beat Edmonton. They have to beat Vegas. They have to beat Colorado or Dallas or both. If they get to the final, then I will give them all the credit in the world. I just don't think if you're a true Stanley Cup contender and you're playing Nashville and you are about to give up an empty net goal and it hits the post, and then you come back and win that game. Great. but your bona fides are not lined up wall to wall and to the sky like they are with the other teams. I don't know what happened in the NFL draft. I've read it. I've read the stuff from the people that I trust on the Eagles. I think there was a lot of weirdness. It started with the quarterbacks early. Atlanta, the Falcons did weirdness. And then who else was weird? There was Denver.
Nix to Denver was a reach as well. Yeah. Denver's quarterback room was so depleted that Bo Nix is immediately going to come in and be the day one starter, I would imagine, and immediately come in and be the best quarterback on that team. But it was still a reach in the same sense as Atlanta, where you could have traded that pick, got a abundance of riches, and gotten him way later down in the draft. But listen, Denver needed a quarterback, so credit to them for going out and getting their guy.
How do you think Buffalo did?
Well, I love Keon Coleman. He was our first overall pick. It wasn't until the first pick of the second round this year. He was a phenomenal receiver at Florida State this year. I read a report that said he didn't run routes very well, and I thought that was crazy because I honestly thought that was like his best strength watching Florida State's games, game in and game out. I thought he runs an incredible route tree. I thought he was very quick on his 90-degree breaks. I thought he was very good at getting up the field on post and flag routes. I thought he was a great receiver, so I'm very interested to see how that's going to work out. But I do think he's going to come in and be an immediate number one receiver in that Buffalo's wide receiver room. Ray Davis out of Kentucky, he was one of our fourth round pick, or maybe the only fourth round pick. I'd have to go back and check. He's a good kid. He hits the holes really hard. He plays mean. He plays physical. Dwayne Carter, defensive tackle out of Duke, big body, good with his hands. I liked him. Then you get down the list a little bit, and the only other guy who really stood out to me was DeQuinn Hardy out of Penn State. He played opposite of Kalen King, who was an incredibly touted prospect, didn't end up entering his name in the draft. Overall, it's not the best draft class in the history of the world, but I like that we got a number one wide receiver. I like that we got a guy who can be a short yardage back, and you can't have too many corners. Maybe we'll find a diamond in the rough with Hardy.
And then there was a bunch of UDFAs, and that happens every year. And sometimes you'll see a team. I remember when the Eagles signed Alex Singleton out of the CFL out of Calgary, and he ended up being a pretty good player for them for some time. And we
led the team in tackles one year.
Yeah. We don't really know how all of this is going to turn out. But here's what I don't like about draft post summaries is clearly the football team is happy with what they got. But what did they get really? Like the number one, the most talented player in the NFL draft was chosen at what number? 6, 4, 3?
I get the sentiment, and a lot of years I would agree. There's an argument the most talented player went fourth overall in Marvin Harrison Jr. I would say it was, in fact, Caleb Williams, who was the 1-1.
Okay. All right. I will put away my shenanigans and my verbal. I'm about to sneeze.
You want me to take over for a little bit and run the show while you do it?
No, it was not a sneeze. Ooh. It was a pretend sneeze. It was a fake sneeze.
All right.
A prima donna sneeze.
I get those sometimes.
It's the hay fever. There's nothing I can do. What have you got? We're doing Mamma Mia, right? You're not going to blow that off again, are you?
Well, we can do it for sure if you want to get to that at 140. In my mind, I'd kind of already decided it was Mamma NBA playoffs, but well, we can.
No, but that's fine. We're going to do. I don't have to talk for 15 minutes.
Yes.
That's the key.
I'll take the pressure off you.
I'm like, once the game is won at 140, right. I'm Plunkett on the bench.
Yeah. Once you've had another show that the sponsors are happy with and the brass are happy with, 140, you get the check in the mail and you're happy to hand it over.
Gregor sent me something nice by email. It was a nice comment he sent me.
That's awesome. About me?
No.
No.
No. I was quite pleased.
I wasn't even a reference?
No, I think it was something like, you're doing God's work, dragging Declan along with you. And bringing the show up in terms of quality. I think that was it.
I mean, he's not wrong, but it still hurts that he said it. Typed it out in an email and hit send.
Small chance that he did not actually say that at all. I mean, a small chance, but there you go. Okay. On the way, rumors. Lots happening. Lots happening. Football over a little bit, but the NBA is just ratcheting up. There's a few NHL notes we'll pass along as well, including some recalls from Bakersfield. We'll tell you that and more on the way. Don't forget, Rachel Dory at 1240. We're going to talk to her about the Oilers and Stuart Skinner specifically, run through some of the other series as well. At 1:20 today, it's Jason Greger and Mama NBA on the way at 1:40. This is the Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440. Brought to you by Wolf GMC Buick. Visit wolfgmcbuick.com. I would like spring. I mean, I want 17 degrees. I want to sneeze because I can, like, hear somebody next door mowing the lawn and that, you know, that lawny smell? Not a man named Lonnie, but the lawn-like smell. I would like that, please. I don't like driving to work and thinking, this could be October or September. We need the sunshine in our lives. We need that Stevie Wonder song rolling around in our brain and going, yes, it is sunny out. If we could do that, I'd really appreciate it. Alberta, could we get on that? Rumors is brought to you by C.W. Eaves Troughing. Now, there's a summer, spring thing that makes me feel like we're on our way. We are looking for experienced eaves troughers. We'll pay top rates for new construction and renovations in the Edmonton area. We have a great team atmosphere. Apply today. Info at cweaves.com or call 435-1492. That's cweaves.com or call 435-1492. Yes, I did pre-read it. Sometimes it's a Monday, and that's what happens. The NHL has announced 2024 Vezina finalists. No real surprise. Connor Hellebuyck, Sergei Bobrovsky, Thatcher Demko. I guess I'm a little surprised that they're not all Russian. The Maple Leafs have signed Nikita Gabrankin to a 3-year entry deal. Sure, I can say that, but can't say eavesdroppers. Are you going to see that a lot of that? I think the Oilers are not done in signing free agents. I don't think they'll be Russian. The Islanders are linked to Marcus Hoberg. And that is interesting because they were also linked to a defenseman named Andrea Glauser. So now a defenseman and a goaltender apparently headed to New York. This is going to be very, very interesting across the National Hockey League over the next few weeks. We're very quickly in the West coming upon some of the first round teams exiting stage left. Nashville, Los Angeles, Dallas, Winnipeg. Florida's up on Tampa Bay 3-1. Boston's up on Toronto 3-1. Carolina's going to win that series. This is happening at a pretty rapid clip in the first round. Now, everybody will reset. There'll be a couple of days off, and then you go into the second round. So for the Edmonton Oilers, it is key that they win the next game. Because if you win the next game, you're going to be ready to roll. You're going to be cooking with petrol. You're going to be at least tied with the team you're playing in terms of rest. And they don't play for a while, right? Like the next game is not like tomorrow night. Am I correct in saying that?
Is this the part where you're asking me the question?
Yeah. Tuesday, the Oilers do not play.
No, Wednesday.
They play Wednesday.
And the time is to be decided. I saw some people on Twitter asking about puck drop. It is to be decided. Jason was under the presumption it will either be 7:50, 8:20, or 8:50 our time.
So count on 8:50.
Well, it'll depend what's happening in Tampa, Florida, because there may only be two games that day. It may just be Vegas, Dallas, and then us. So if that happens, it could be. It'd be the early game.
The Thursday schedule, I'm mocking and laughing at. You know why? It's Boston is ahead of Toronto 3-1. Hurricanes are ahead of Islanders 3-1. Colorado's ahead of the Jets 3-1. What are the odds any of those three get played on Thursday? This round is coming to a rapid end. By the way, the Oilers did recall two players. I suspect there'll be more on the way. Philip Broberg and Jack Campbell, who we talked about a lot down the stretch, as a possible option. He's like the third man on the depth chart. Goaltending is goaltending. They're not going to put an e-bug in there, even if it's Declan. So Campbell is a part of the team. He's here to practice because, number one, you get a little time off for the starter for practice if it's an off day. Secondly, he's not that far away. He could dress in a game, like if they want to give rest to the backup or, you know, whatever. And injuries do occur. And so he's here. So is Philip Broberg. Now, they're 8 strong defensively. They're 3 strong on in the goal department. And, of course, they have enough forwards. But I do think Adam Ernie probably gets a recall. Maybe Lane Peterson. Maybe a Raphael Lavoie. He has played this year with the team. Two players that I don't know that they'll get recalled, but I have written about them and I've talked about them, and I want you to know their names by the fall, if you would. Max Wanner he has really come along during the year. He's a physical player. You'll love him, Edmonton. He's nasty. He takes a bite out of the opposition. They don't like him. You can tell. There's a lot of pushing and shoving of Wanner after whistles because he's gotten them. He is we watch it here in Edmonton with Vincent Desharnais. You know, that miserable guy to play against has value to the team that's sending him out there, and that is Max Wanner. He can skate too. And Jaden Grubb, a little bit similar. He's a centerman and may need a little more time, although I suspect both will be in the minors most, if not all, of next year. But Jaden Grubb, who they acquired from the New York Rangers before the draft last year, he really showed a lot. He's not a big-time scorer, but he's an outscorer, even as an AHL rookie, and that has value. I will say that I am, now I'm not a scout, but I run the numbers and I have a look at them, and I'm a little concerned about Xavier Bourgault. I think Carter Savoy did some good things, but got hurt a little bit again this year. I think Tyler Tulio did make a step forward, and I think that Matvei Petrov was a rookie, and he showed flashes of what he can do, but he got lost in the flood a little bit, and I will predict changes in Bakersfield. I don't know what they looked like. I never want people to lose their jobs, but I do think that there may be fewer veterans in terms of forwards. You might see another defenseman at it, or maybe one of the veteran defensemen heading out and a replacement coming in. Maybe a righty is what they feel like they need. But the names that I've mentioned, Bourgault, Savoy, Tulio, Grubb, Wanner, I forgot somebody, Petrov, those guys got to play. They have to. So that means somebody's heading out of town, in my opinion. And don't sleep on those defensemen they signed or traded for, like Dineen and Hoffenbauer. You never know with those guys. They are AHL players, but they might emerge in the next year or two. Follow the offseason happenings for the Edmonton. They've already signed a ton of people, you know, but I think there's more on the way. I'm very interested in finding out what this team does during the offseason. I know, stop talking about the off. I understand, but it is important, and that's why we talk about it. The NBA is all year, all the time. It just is. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what happens. There's always something going on. Changing of the guard going on right now. I don't know if you've been following the NBA. I know my friend Declan is, but Declan, can you give people an idea about, if I'm going to say to you, legendary player, not having the kind of playoff impact he has in the past, mm-hmm. who would you name?
Well, 3, actually.
Yeah.
Steph Curry, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And
Durant
as you said,
is a big one. That's like, not that the other two aren't, but they died on the vine.
Durant's legacy has taken a hit. And I am very much of the opinion that Kevin Durant is without question a top 25 player of all time, probably top 20. But and I give him this credit, and this is why the argument is so difficult, because on those 2 championship teams with Steph Curry and the Warriors, he was a 2-time finals MVP, and he was objectively the best player in those 2 finals, and I give him that credit. But without Steph Curry, he has fallen short time and time again. Before he made 1 finals, but certainly after, he has not reached the 2nd round since leaving the Golden State Warriors in 2019. He has been swept twice in the 1st round since leaving the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. He has had 2 super teams in that time and has nothing to show for it. His legacy has taken a hit, and like you said, the old guard has been changed. Steph Curry didn't even make the playoffs this year. LeBron is down 3-1 and is about to lose in 5 tonight to Denver on the road. Kevin Durant is already out, and he got swept by a young face of the league in Anthony Edwards. The guard has changed, the new generation is here, and the superstars of yesterday are coming to hand the torch over.
I'm watching before game four, and they're talking about like one Hall of Famer for sure, maybe a couple possible on that team. And Minnesota can't win, and then they do. Like that, they've spent a lot of money on that team.
Oh my good. First of all, they've spent an incredible amount of money on just those three, let alone filling out the rest of their roster. They do not have a first round pick until 2029, I believe it is.
And they
don't have a second round pick until 2030. Bradley Beal had 9 points in this elimination game, turned the ball over two, maybe three times in incredibly crucial moments, had 18 points a game this season, which he was a former 30-point scorer, incredible drop-off, and Bradley Beal is owed $160 million over the next 3 years with a no-trade clause. Phoenix is beyond in shambles, and you almost, anyone who doesn't know, actually, this is something that is worth mentioning. Their owner, a guy by the name Matashiba, he bought the team in December 2022. And the notion around the Phoenix Suns is that this guy has no idea how to run a basketball team. He's too involved in front office decisions. He doesn't know what he's doing. He treats it like he's playing NBA 2K. And we saw that with this roster. You were almost at the point you have to move Devin Booker, who was thought to be the cornerstone of your franchise just because he's the only way you can get any real value back in terms of picks or in terms of players to round out the roster at reasonable salaries. So if you're a Phoenix fan, it is bad because it is going to get, I think, a lot worse before it gets better. And that Bradley Beal contract is, you could argue, the worst contract in North American sports right now with how he played in Game 4 last night.
It's, you know, I because the NBA is like it's a monster league, and because so much attention is paid at the top end, like LeBron, yeah, Sean, so bright, a lot of players didn't get the attention.
Yes.
But these are big names you're talking about.
Yes.
And the expectation was it was going to be at least a couple of more years before the cliff.
Yes.
Are we talking about the cliff?
I think so. Because a couple things. One, this team doesn't have a point guard. Like, you can look at Devin Booker's assist number and be like, oh, he gets 7 assists a game. That is him kicking the ball to someone with 3 seconds left 18 times a game and having them hoist up a shot, and 7 times they hit it. Mm. They don't have anyone to control tempo. They don't have anyone to run offensive sets. They don't have anyone to direct traffic. They have no point guard in that system. On top of that, you have 3 ball-dominant players who all like to play on the perimeter. They have no size down low in the low post, and we saw that exploited against Minnesota. Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns had their way with Jusuf Nurkic simply because there just wasn't enough size and there wasn't enough skill on top of that in the low post for that Phoenix Suns team. Like I said, I'm going to reiterate it because the number is so crazy. Bradley Beal is owed $160 million over the next 3 years.
Wow.
$50 million, $55 million, $55 million for a guy who put up 18 points a night this season and had 9 points in an elimination game and has a no trade clause. So I think the cliff has certainly come for Phoenix, because you are so handcuffed by how much money you're owed those three. And then there's also the thing in the back of your mind where Devin Booker did get us to a finals. Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. Bradley Beal's a multiple-time All-Star, right? So you can trick yourself and you can convince yourself into saying this will work. But we just saw it. They ran into, and I give them this credit, they ran into probably the worst matchup for them, but they did not look good. They got swept, and I think they have fallen off the ledge. I do not know what this Phoenix Suns team does moving forward.
It's pretty dire. Like, it is Phoenix especially, but you know, L.A. will just grab whatever, another super-duper star somewhere. But for Phoenix, there's no way out. You are absolutely screwed.
And they had the mold when they made the finals in 2021. They had Devin Booker, who was a team cornerstone. They had, now Chris Paul's obviously fallen off the ledge. He's old. He's in his 18th season. But you had a guy in Chris Paul who could run the point, who could control the point. Even if he was putting up a stat line of like 12-6, not that he was too many nights, he was a guy who had a great IQ for the game and could control the offense. You had a center in DeAndre Ayton who could defend on one end and could go out and get you 18 on the other end. And it's a different 18 than Bradley Beal's, right? Because it's an 18 where you're running the offense through him. And if you get the ball to him in the low post, you can run high pick and rolls and you can have screens coming across the key. He can get the ball. He can kick it out. It's not like a Bradley Beal where he's forcing shots and it's kind of an empty 18 points, right? Like it's not all not all points per games are created equally, and DeAndre Ayton was a guy who was putting that up because he wasn't taking away from Devin Booker, and he was a complimentary piece. You had the mold there. You completely blew it up, and now you have nothing, and you are in. You're not even in. You are beyond in cap hell, right? So it's tough if you're Phoenix.
We have to take a break. We're going to talk to Rachel Doerr in a second, but Tomato Soup sends this in. We're going to have this on Mama NBA 140. Fellas, I think the only thing that matters to LeBron is playing with his son. Will he go wherever... whoever drafts his kid. So can we answer that in an hour?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Can you tease us a little bit of what were you thinking?
The first thing I would say is I wouldn't say it's the only thing that matters to him.
Okay. Well, that sounds interesting. All right. On the way, Rachel Doerr. We're going to talk about the Oilers. We're going to talk about most of the series that are going on right now. Going to drill down on what happened last night in L.A. Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440. Powered by Wolf GMC Buick. Check it out. Truck Month continues in April at wolfgmcbuick.com. Joined now by Rachel Doerr from Staff and Grab Podcast. So much to talk about. So much interesting Stanley Cup playoff hockey. Welcome. How was your weekend, Rachel?
I'd be better if the city I lived in wasn't angry at each other and people weren't yelling and screaming. But other than that, pretty good.
Is it the Toronto power play? Is that what's getting people angry?
I think it's a number of things, but that is on the list, yes.
Okay. For Toronto, it's usually either transit, nobody's picking up the garbage, raccoons, or something about the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, so you've ticked two of those boxes. You've ticked transit and Maple Leafs. I'm not really sure about the raccoons or the garbage. Thank goodness I live in a condo.
Oh, there you go. Okay. The Oilers won 1-0 last night, 33 shots against, 14 high dangers, according to Natural Stat Trick. The entire team is being credited with a strong performance, but the shots and high dangers seemed a little high. How much credit does Stuart Skinner get for the 1-0 win, in your opinion?
I think he has to get at least 50% of that credit, right? Obviously, you're kind of looking at it, and I look at the Oilers-King series, and then I look at the Canucks-Pred series, and it's super clear that it's going one way in one series and another way in another series, right? You see Vancouver, they're getting like 13 shots and winning games, which is something that generally is not feasible and not going to repeat itself. In the same way that with the Oilers, you're getting the opposite, right? Where they're giving up a ton, not generating, and they're getting away with it, right? And so I guess, yeah, Stuart Skinner, he deserves some credit. I think the Oilers, what I will say is I think they've done a better job than they have in the regular season of keeping the puck to the outside.
Yeah.
And when you keep the puck to the outside, yes, you're going to give up scoring chances, and you're totally fine to give up a high volume of shots if it's from the outside. So I think they've done a good job mitigating those scoring chances in the really, really dangerous areas. But I still think you want to cut it down to maybe 10 or 11.
And the follow-up is because I was just surprised by how little they were getting done with the puck. They were shooting it out a lot, the Chris Russell special. And I wonder if they're going to have to open it up a little bit, be creative, and you know, add a little risk into it, if, say, Vancouver or Vegas or Colorado, as their spring goes along, because – you know, getting one power play goal works if you get a shutout, but that's not really how the Oilers are wired or how they're deployed.
Yeah, I think it's different team dependent, right? I think when you look at it, Colorado, ever since the game one loss, they've looked absolutely terrifying in the last three games. And I think that's probably not a team that I would want to run up against, generally speaking. But you're absolutely right. You're not going to be able to give up those kinds of scoring chances, because while I do think Adrian Kempe and Anze Kopitar are absolutely fantastic hockey players, those scoring chances have given to Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen find themselves in the back of the net more often than not. And so that is a very, very dangerous game to be playing if you're playing it against Colorado. I think, similarly speaking, if it is Vegas, that's probably not a scoring chance you want to give up to Jack Eichel, Mark Stone, Thomas Hertl, even Jonathan Marchessault for that matter. That's not great. I don't think you want to be trading scoring chances. The Vancouver option would be interesting to me because of the lack of Thatcher Demko. And apparently now Casey DeSmith, although it sounds like he is going to be back post-Tace, although I thought Archer Seelogs was fantastic last night, and so maybe he deserves a Game 5 start. I think they can probably afford to trade chances with Vancouver, because while Vancouver has depth, they don't have the nuclear weapons that Edmonton has. And I think from that perspective, Vancouver's defensive core doesn't have what it takes, especially given that Quinn Hughes is playing seriously hurt from what it sounds like. I think he could afford to trade chances with Vancouver. I don't think you can afford to trade chances with the likes of Nathan MacKinnon or Jack Eichel.
How much of a bullet did Vancouver dodge? I'm not saying even if the puck goes in the empty net that they would have lost the series, but they're up 3-1, which is miles different than 2-2. And with all of the other teams looking at 3-1 now in the conference, how much of a break was that for Vancouver to go up 3-1 along with all the other teams?
Oh, enormous. I don't think it can be understated, because when you look at it in the playoffs, it's obviously a war of attrition. And when your best player, and I think it's pretty comfortable to say that Quinn Hughes has been the Canucks' best skater this year, although JT Miller and Brock Besser have been absolutely fantastic through four games, and they deserve a ton of credit. I don't think that this hockey team is where it is without Quinn Hughes. And you can tell very clearly, Frank Saravalli had a great piece on him sort of playing hurt. Vancouver dodging that bullet with the hit post yesterday was massive, because 2-2 means you're guaranteed to be playing six games. And that means that that's at least two more games that Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, who's playing banged up, have to play. And so if you can avoid it, if you can win in five, and you avoid traveling back to Nashville and then traveling back to Vancouver, I think that's a huge bullet dodged by the Canucks. And that was a very resilient win. I think quite a big portion of that could be chalked up to luck, obviously, given the goalpost and what transpired after that. But I think they deserve some credit there for battling through and not giving up with 2 minutes left in the game. And it could prove to be an enormous rest, right? I don't think we could be surprised if Edmonton wins in five, but I'm also not going to rule out the fact that LA is going to come out and maybe this thing goes six. And so any level of rest you can get in the playoffs is going to be vitally important, especially when you have guys like Thatcher Demko and Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, who are all battling various injuries to various extents.
Rachel Dory, our guest, Staff and Grab podcast. Want to talk a little bit about the Jets down 3-1. Now they've got, they had a tough matchup for sure. And Makar scoring like he did, that's just degrees of difficulty. But it feels like they were, you know, they had a weird year. Everybody was worried they were going to lose their free agents. They got them back. They made a really nice trade with LA. Going into the playoffs, things looked very good. Colorado, you know, scored a bunch and lost game one. And it's all kind of fallen apart like a cheap suit. I've owned cheap suits. I know what it's like. But is there any part of the Jets that is hopeful right now? Or is this just fait accompli? Colorado's got it going on.
Did anybody have Connor Hellebuck giving up five goals on four straight games on their bingo card? Because
no.
I definitely didn't. I don't think when we were sitting here talking 2 weeks ago, we did not have Connor Hellebuck with an under 900 save percentage on our list of things that we thought was going to occur in the playoffs. And so I think that's been a problem. Now, by no means am I going to lay this at the feet of Connor Hellebuck. The team in front of him has not been very good over the last three games. And I think they'd be the first people to tell you that. If you look at what Rick Bonus said in his press conference, he was pretty harsh in his assessment. And I thought it was a very accurate assessment of how his team has performed over the last couple games. Losing Brendan Dillon hurts, obviously, but not to the extent that you should be coming apart at the seams and surrendering the types of scoring chances that you're surrendering. And obviously with Cale Makar, I mean, you brought him up. I know Quinn Hughes is going to win the Norris, and I know Roman Josi is going to be up there, and they both had fantastic seasons. But oh my goodness, Cale Makar is still the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. Like I know he said he got lucky, but at some point, and it kind of where he takes the puck, kind of makes a move at the last minute to shake Gus Nyquist. But if that puck bobbles over his stick as opposed to just kind of hit the heel and settle down, that puck's out of the zone and they don't tie the game. So you got to be good to be lucky and lucky to be good. And I think both Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar were great examples of that. I think when you look at this, Colorado has seemed to have found their game. Alexander Georgiev has seemed to have calmed the waters a little bit. And that's really all Colorado needs. They have the offensive prowess that they can just go full send and probably score 5 goals a game, which Georgiev only has to give up 4. And if he can manage to just not give up more than 4, Colorado is going to be a problem for whoever they play. And that includes Vegas or Dallas.
Everybody except Vegas Golden Knights fans wants Dallas to win because they want a deep series between two powerhouse teams. Do you see Dallas winning tonight, and do they have a chance in this series?
Oh, I think it's tough, right? I think when you look at it, first of all, Wyatt Johnson, he was good last year in the playoffs. He was probably the best player on the ice in Game 3. Like, he was absolutely incredible. And for a 20-year-old to be having that kind of impact, that's a problem. And we talked about this last week. The difference in that series was going to be depth. And if Dallas was going to win, it was going to be on the strength of their depth. Well, Wyatt Johnston was a fantastic example of that, that when Dallas's depth really steps up, Vegas has problems. And even though it was a super competitive game and it's been a pretty competitive series in the sense of, like, just play and runs of play, I think Dallas can make this a series. I'm having trouble squaring Vegas losing 2 in a row at home. I've been in that barn for the cup clinching game. I know how loud it can be. I know what the atmosphere is like. That is a distinct advantage. And so I think we're kind of in a situation where I could see Vegas winning tonight and Dallas winning Game 5, and then maybe Dallas pulls out Game 6. But I think we're in a scenario here where Vegas taking the first 2 games in Dallas presented Dallas with a really big challenge. I'm not going to rule out that they may come back, but I certainly wouldn't be laying my money down on it.
What's wrong with the Maple Leafs power play?
Can I say what isn't wrong with it? Because that list is shorter. Honestly, Rotai, their special teams, their penalty kill is horrendous. Their power play is, there's not an appropriate word that you can say on the airwaves that would describe that power play. I think part of it is Austin Matthews is very clearly ill. That guy played through an enormous injury last year in the playoffs when he should not have been playing. So for the doctors to have pulled him in Game 4 tells me that he's not up to snuff. And when he's not up to snuff, your power play can't click, because that is a weapon where if Boston knows they don't necessarily have to respect it in the way that they usually would, that allows them to be on other players. Mitch Marner, outside of the assist he had in Game 3 and the goal he had in Game 4, has done effectively nothing. William Nylander, I thought, given it was his first game back, was fine. He wasn't great. John Tavares hasn't been great. And so I think when you look at the power play, you look at everyone that's on that unit, and none of them are playing well right now. So I'm not exactly surprised that the power play is not clicking. And the other situation you have is Marner missed time with a high ankle sprain. Then you got Nylander missing time. So that power play as a unit hasn't really played together in probably 6 weeks. And so there's going to be some rust. It's obviously comes at probably the worst. But at the same time, when you've got a power play that has nearly $50 million worth of players on it, I expect you to be able to make a 10-foot pass. Like, that is the bare minimum expectation. And you look at the Oilers' power play, and yes, they didn't run into the same injury trouble towards the end of the year that the Maple Leafs have, but at no point do I watch the Oilers' power play and go, they can't even complete a pass, or they can't even break the puck in. That's where we're at with the Maple Leafs right now. They can't break the puck in, they can't make a pass, they can't recover a puck after they've shot the puck, and so the none of it is working, and it just, I'm not even sure there's anything you can do.
Wow. That's well done. No wonder Toronto's arguing with themselves. Rachel, thank you. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. There you go. Rachel Dory. One thing I know is Rachel taking down the Maple Leafs power play like that is making everybody who's an Oilers fan very happy. There's a rivalry there. I so badly want a Maple Leafs Oilers final. The country won't survive. The transit will take a hit. The garbage won't be collected. I don't even know if the Anik satellite will stay up. It might just land in Estevan. I don't know. But I'd love to see it, just to watch the world burn. Okay, on the way in hour number two, we're going to talk NBA with Mama NBA with Declan at 1:40, Jason Greger at 1:20. On the way, there's a coaching change in the NHL. We'll tell you about it. Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440.
This is a Sports 1440 update.
And for your Sports 1440 update, brought to you by Fountain Tire. Right now at Fountain Tire, being on the road together means getting a great deal on tires. Save up to $200 on select tires, including Goodyear, until June 8th. Financing options are available. Just two games in the NHL tonight, the Battle of Florida, as the Lightning visit the Panthers. Panthers lead that series 3-1 with a chance to close it out. Puck drop for that one at 5 p.m. And then the late game, Dallas still in Vegas as Vegas leads that series 2-1. Dallas looks to even things up, heading back home for two of the final three. Puck drop in that one, 7:30. Three games in the NBA playoffs tonight as the Celtics are in Miami to play the Heat. Tip-off for that one at 5:30. Boston currently leading that series 2-1. OKC in New Orleans at 6:30 with a chance to close out the series. They currently lead the Pels 3-0 in that one. And the Lakers heading back to Denver against the Nuggets in the late game. Tip-off for that one, 8 p.m. Denver leading that series with a chance to close it out 3-1. Games around the MLB today as the Yankees and Orioles get going just after 4:30, as do the Cardinals and Tigers and Nationals and Marlins. Just after 5, you're going to see the Cubs and the Mets, the Twins and the White Sox, and the Rays and the Brewers. Later games include the Phillies and the Angels, Braves and Mariners, Reds and Padres and Dodgers and Diamondbacks, and of course, just after 5 p.m., Kansas City in Toronto to take on the Blue Jays. Some news around the NHL as the Vezina finalists have been revealed. Sergei Bobrovsky, Connor Hellebuck, and Thatcher Demko were the top three finalists, and a fractured cheekbone for Vladislav Nemestnikov of the Winnipeg Jets. He is questionable for Game 5, according to Jets coach Rick Bowness. Travis Kelce and the Kansas City Chiefs have agreed to a two-year extension to keep him with the club as the highest-paid tight end in the National Football League, and the Seattle Kraken fire head coach Dave Haxtell. Finally, in the WHL playoffs tonight, Prince George in Portland. Puck drop for that one, 7 p.m. Hour two of the Lowdown with Low Tide is on the way. I'm Declan Kruger, and this has been a Sports 1440 update.